tomorrow night, something like what, 100 million people? They're all going to turn on their TVs.
Oh, at least.
They're going to buy the guacamole, invite the neighbors over, and they'll settle in for what is really the last campfire event we have left in American culture.
It's pretty much the only thing left that we all still watch at the exact same time.
Exactly. It is Saturday, February 7th, 2026, and tomorrow is Super Bowl LX.
Mm.
But if you've been reading the stack of articles we have in front of us, you know a big chunk of that audience isn't just looking forward to the game.
No. They're dreading it. Or at least parts of it.
They're dreading the culture war that comes with it.
It really does feel different this year. I mean, usually the controversy is about a bad call from a ref or, you know, ticket prices.
Right.
But the sources we're deep diving into today, we've got commentary from Greg Garner, some great analysis from The World and everything in it, and reports on a boycott movement. It all suggests something deeper is fracturing.
So today we're not talking X's and O's. Not at all. We are talking about the battle for the living room. We're looking at the friction between the spectacle, what the NFL wants to sell us, and values, what a lot of families actually want to see.
And that friction has sparked this movement that calls itself consumer accountability. And that's a fascinating pivot from just, you know, passively watching to actively protesting.
Okay, so let's set the stage before we get into the heavy stuff. Just to ground everyone in reality, what is the actual event happening tomorrow?
Right. The basics are simple. Super Bowl 60. Kickoff is around 6:30 p.m. Eastern. It's at Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara. And you've got the New England Patriots facing off against the Seattle Seahawks.
So coastal clash.
It is. The broadcast is on NBC, Peacock, Telemundo, basically everywhere. But the game itself, that's not the flashpoint in our research. The flashpoint is the halftime show.
And this year, the NFL selected Bad Bunny as the headliner. Now, to be fair, he is undeniably huge.
Oh, a global superstar. Massive numbers.
So from a business perspective, you can see why the NFL picked him.
Sure, if you're looking strictly at the metrics, he brings a young global demographic. But, you know, the sources we're looking at argue that this choice represents a specific set of values that, well, that clashes violently with the family-friendly image the NFL tries so hard to project.
Let me play devil's advocate for a second here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Super Bowl has always been a bit edgy, right?
Mm-hmm.
We had Prince in the silhouette. We had the Janet Jackson thing years ago. We had the big hip-hop showcase.
Mm-hmm.
Is this really new, or are the sources just being nostalgic for some 1950s that never really existed?
That is the pushback you often hear. But Greg Garner's commentary in our stack argues that, no, this is different. He suggests we've moved past edgy and into alienating.
How so?
Well, Garner argues that music and entertainment are not morally neutral. We tend to think of them as just like fun or a distraction.
Wait, just background noise.
Exactly. But he says they're actually pedagogical. They teach. They catechize us on what is normal and what is celebrated.
So by putting an artist on that stage, the NFL isn't just saying, here's some music. They're saying this is the pinnacle of our culture.
Precisely. It's an endorsement. And when that artist's entire brand is built on hypersexualized imagery or lyrics that a lot of people feel degrade women or themes that many parents find harmful, Garner argues it creates a kind of breach of contract.
The contract being, I let you into my living room, you don't embarrass me in front of my kids.
Right. And the Super Bowl is unique because it forces that multi-generational viewing. You have grandma, you have the parents, you have the six-year-old all in the same room.
Mm-hmm.
Garner's point is that the NFL knows this, yet they consistently choose entertainment that makes that room uncomfortable. It signals to the traditional family viewer, you are not our priority. The cool factor is our priority.
It's the cool table versus the kitchen table.
That is a perfect way to put it. And the analysis from The World and Everything and All, it takes this a step further. They argue this isn't an accident. They describe a kind of consensus reality that mass media tries to build. So when you watch the halftime show, you're being told, this is what America is. And for millions of people, they look at that screen and they say, that is not my America. That doesn't represent my values, my faith, or how I'm raising my children.
And that creates that feeling of being politically homeless or culturally homeless.
Yeah.
You want to watch the football, but you have to sit through a lecture or a spectacle that kind of mocks your worldview.
Exactly. And usually people just grumble and, you know, change the channel for 20 minutes. But this year, the sources are highlighting a very different reaction. They're highlighting a hunger for a different kind of story.
This was the most surprising part of the research for me. We have this Bad Bunny spectacle on one side, and then Sen. The sources present this totally different narrative arc involving the artist Jelly Roll.
It is such a stark contrast.
For those who might not know, Jelly Roll has had this massive rise in popularity, but his backstory is, well, it's not polished. It's not media trained.
No, it is raw. And that is exactly why the sources latch onto him. Jelly Roll's story involves, you know, severe addiction, mental health struggles, incarceration. He's been in and out of the system since he was a teenager.
He was a drug dealer.
He was. He has seen the absolute darkest parts of the American experience.
But the narrative isn't, look how bad I was.
No, the narrative is, look how I was redeemed. The sources really highlight his recent testimony and his public appearances, where he explicitly talks about faith. He talks about Jesus. He talks about this concept of the rearview mirror.
That the windshield is bigger than the rearview mirror, because where you're going matters more than where you've been.
It's such a powerful metaphor, and it's deeply Christian in its structure. You know, the idea of sin, repentance, and redemption.
Yeah.
And the argument these sources are making is that this is the story America is actually starving for.
So you have the NFL giving us the spectacle, which is all about excess pleasure, that look at me fame. And then you have this countercurrent of redemption, which is about brokenness and healing and humility.
And the friction comes from the fact that the spectacle gets the billion-dollar platform, while the redemption story feels like it has to fight for airtime. The sources ask, why is the Bad Bunny narrative the default for our culture, while the Jelly Roll narrative is treated as, like, a niche interest?
It's interesting because Jelly Roll is huge right now, too. It's not like he's some unknown artist.
Not at all.
But he represents a different kind of fame.
He represents vulnerability, and I think that's the key. The Super Bowl halftime show is usually about invulnerability. It's about being untouchable, perfect, glitzy. Jelly Roll is about being very touchable, very flawed, and very open about it.
Right.
And the sources suggest that in a time where mental health crises are spiking and addiction is ravaging communities, the redemption story is actually the more relevant one.
But the NFL went with the glitz.
They went with the glitz.
Right.
And this brings us to the so what part of our deep dive. Because in the past, people would just, you know, write an angry tweet.
Yeah.
But this year, there's an organized effort to hit the NFL where it hurts.
Let's talk about this consumer accountability movement. We saw this phrase pop up in the TPUSA reports and in Garner's commentary. It sounds a bit like a boycott, but they seem to frame it differently.
They do. They're very careful to distinguish it from cancel culture.
Okay, what's the difference? Because to the average person, it sounds the same. I don't like this, so I'm trying to stop it.
The distinction the sources make is it's about the goal.
Mm.
Cancel culture, generally speaking, is about silencing a person.
Mm.
You know, making sure they can't speak or work because of something they said or did. It's about removal.
Right.
Consumer accountability, as they describe it here, is about market signals. It's saying, we are the customers. You are the business. If you sell us a product we find toxic, we simply won't buy it.
So it's not Bad Bunny shouldn't be allowed to sing. It's we aren't going to give the NFL our ratings while he does.
Exactly. It's an economic argument. Institutions like the NFL and NBC, they run on ad revenue. Ad revenue is based on eyeballs. If you remove the eyeballs, you change the incentive structure.
But does it actually work? I mean, the Super Bowl numbers are astronomical. Does a few thousand people turning off the TV really matter?
That is the big question. But the strategy detailed in the sources isn't just turn off the TV, it's turn on something else.
The alternative stream.
Right. The sources point to a specific counter-programming effort. Turning Point USA and other family-focused organizations are hosting a halftime alternative. The idea is, when the clock hits zero for the second quarter, you mute or turn off the NBC broadcast.
And you pull up a laptop or cast a stream to your TV instead.
Yes. And instead of the spectacle, you get 20 minutes of programming that aligns with the values these families feel are being ignored. Discussions on faith, patriotic music, or even just family-friendly entertainment that doesn't need a parental advisory.
It sounds a bit complicated technically, though. I mean, you have to sync it up, get the whole family to switch inputs. Isn't the friction too high?
The friction is the point. That's what makes it a protest. It requires effort. It requires the viewer to say, my values are important enough that I am willing to go through the hassle of switching inputs to protect them. It's an active rejection of what's being spoon-fed to you.
It's fascinating because technology is what makes this possible. 10 years ago, if you turned off the Super Bowl, you just sat in silence. Now you can curate your own halftime.
That is the fragmentation we talked about at the beginning. We're entering an era where there's no longer a single mainstream. You have the NFL's version of reality, and you have the alternative version, and people are realizing they have the power to choose which reality they inhabit for those 20 minutes.
It effectively breaks the spell.
It does. The Super Bowl relies on FOMO, fear of missing out. Did you see the halftime show? Everyone's talking about it. This movement is trying to replace FOMO with JOMO. The joy of missing out.
Okay.
It's the satisfaction of saying, no, I didn't see it because I chose not to support it. I watched something that edified me instead.
So where does this leave the cultural landscape? If you have half the country watching Bad Bunny and the other half, or at least a significant chunk, watching a values-based stream on their iPad, are we even having a national event anymore?
That is the tragedy and the reality of it. The sources argue that we aren't really one culture anymore. We're maybe two cultures occupying the same geography. The Super Bowl used to paper over those cracks for one night. But if the spectacle becomes too alienating, well, those cracks become canyons.
And the NFL is sort of caught in the middle. They want the global cool points, but they rely on that domestic family viewership.
And they're finding out that you cannot serve two masters. You can't endlessly push the envelope of edgy content without eventually pushing the traditional audience right out the door.
It reminds me of that Jelly Roll quote again about the windshield. The NFL is looking at the windshield, where culture is going, the youth, the edge. But they might be forgetting who is in the back seat.
And the people in the back seat are the ones buying the tickets and the merchandise. If they decide to get out of the car stops moving.
So tomorrow is the big test. We'll see the ratings, sure, but I think the real story is going to be what happens in living rooms across the country.
I agree. It's a test of agency. Are we passive consumers who just eat whatever is put on our plate? Or are we active participants who demand that our entertainment actually respects our values?
That brings us to our final thought for this deep dive. We always like to leave you with something to chew on while you're prepping the snacks or maybe setting up your alternative stream.
The question is this: endorsement versus consumption. When you tune in tomorrow, you are counting as a statistic. You're a data point that NBC sells to advertisers. By being there, are you endorsing what you see?
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
That's uncomfortable.
It is. But if the sources are right, that media catechizes us and shapes our values, then we have to ask ourselves, what values am I helping to fund? If I'm disgusted by the halftime show, but I watch it anyway, what message am I sending to the people in charge?
It's the difference between just complaining about the menu and actually walking out of the restaurant.
Exactly. And tomorrow, you have the option to walk out, or at least to look away. And this boycott movement suggests that looking away might be the most powerful political act you can take this weekend.
A lot to think about. Whether you're watching for the Patriots, the Seahawks, Bad Bunny, or waiting for that interview on the other stream, maybe just do it with your eyes open.
And know why you're watching.
Thanks for diving in with us. We'll see you on the other side of the weekend.